All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. Practice players out on the field doing a little stretching. Going to be a light workout today here in West Virginia, but we'll keep you up to speed on everything going on.
There's players on the field now, so we had to spin the camera around for anybody watching on YouTube or Twitch.
Yeah.
You've got the view of the meth shed.
Well, I think we got to give everybody every flavor of West Virginia, you know? For a couple of hours, you had the beautiful rural background of the Greenbrier, and now for the 9 o'clock hour, you're going to get to see what it's like to be the wonderful whites of West Virginia on that show.
This is the Greenbrier's meth shed is unlike any other meth shed.
It's the nicest meth shed in the state.
Nothing but blue. What'd they call it on
Crystal Blue Persuasion?
Is that what the
on Breaking Bad?
Yeah,
that was the song they played underneath it.
But it was the blue. His was so
his
good
was
because
blue.
It was blue.
Yeah,
didn't it have a name for it though?
I don't know. I don't know if they did or not. Yeah, I don't know.
So anyway, that's the kind of meth.
Not like they got a commercial during the Super Bowl or something like that. It's just meth. It's meth. That's what
honestly, I drove through. As I told you, I crossed the Potomac.
Yeah.
Like George Washington.
Very patriotic
himself.
Moment for you.
And
I
drove down through just all rural parts of West Virginia. And it wasn't, honestly, people make jokes about West Virginia and everything. Every town I drove through was delightful.
Yeah. Small town Americana, man.
The landscape is just incredible.
It's amazing.
The geography. It's a beautiful state.
Yep. Yeah. All right. So we'll
talk. And the meth.
So we'll take. Oh, chef's kiss on the cook's kiss on the meth. We're going to talk to Texans president Mike Tomlin at the bottom of the hour here live out in West Virginia. In the meantime, C.J. Stroud, in these very chairs that we're sitting in right here, talked to Evan Washburn of CBS Sports yesterday, sideline reporter for CBS Sports. He was here observing Texans practice and asked him, Ben, we're going to skip down to two here and we'll go back to one. How do you view, keep in mind, a season where most pundits and experts said C.J. Stroud regressed and the offense struggled? And undeniably and factually, CJ got his butt kicked physically last year. How do you view – they preface his question with all this stuff.
He did. He was assaulted.
How do you view last season?
I thought it was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was great. Not in the point of, like, winning or losing or success or failures, but it's like what I learned, you know, as a person, you know, as a man of God, as a teammate, you know, as a citizen in society, in Houston, you know, like, so I learned just a bunch. And I think, you know, some of the best things that could ever happen are, you know, things, expectations not being met, because then you really see who cares and who doesn't.
Sure.
And that's where you, like, you know, you can still extend love, but you don't have to give people access. So it just taught me a lot on just, like, you know, who's really there for me, who's not. And I thought, you know, with what I had and what we dealt with as a team, you know, I thought we did great. You know, we're down on linemen a lot. Change a lot in the receiver room, you know, with Tank getting hurt, Steph, you know, and Nico going down early. So, you know, with what we had, I thought we did a good job of weathering the storm. But, you know, at the end of the day, everybody has entitled to their opinion. And I always like criticism and stuff. I think it always makes me play better.
It's weird. Overall, my concern level on C.J. Stroud and if, you know, was his rookie year some sort of mirage and it's never going to be that way again, my concern level that that's the case is very, very low. Let me be clear about that before I say what I'm about to say. I have more cause for concern of some of the things I'm seeing out here at training camp than I have from what I saw from C.J. last year.
Yeah.
Just there have been some accuracy issues here at training camp that are uncharacteristic of him, even from last year, the year that a lot of people saw as mediocre. His accuracy issues, it was more, he threw more picks. And
he had last year he had some curious throws and misfires that you wouldn't see before. A lot of times, though, even watching in real time from the sideline, there were plays last year where it felt like his accuracy wasn't there, and then you'd watch from the end zone on the coach's film, and you realize, oh wow, he actually had a guy's arm around his leg as he was throwing the ball, or it was a tighter window than it looked. I think the same touch that we've seen in the previous 2 years, you haven't necessarily seen.
He's
out
just
here
sailing
year.
Some balls this year, you know, and even some of the ones, even some of the quick hit plays on completed passes, they're behind guy, you know, like they're just, it's not as crisp and okay, at the end of the day, it's a completed pass. But with C.J. Stroud, I mean, the expectation is that the ball is going to be on the face mask.
Well, and I think, again, to go back to how the offense is different this year and how the quarterback has more on his plate, as he's also dealing with a bunch of offensive linemen who are all learning a new defense or a new offense, and they're facing this defense in, you know, day after day. that's really, you know, taken to the offensive line, to the woodshed at times, that everything's just a little uncomfortable. And it's to be expected to a certain point. So it's not an excuse, but to put things in context, there's no way you should have expected this Texans offense, with everything that's new and changing, to come up against this defense and just like be on the same level as them. It's just, it's not that way. It reminds me of like in college wrestling, when a kid that's a 4-time state champion comes up in his first year, his first month in practice, he gets the snot beat out of him by the dudes. There's an adjustment period. And I think that's what they're going through right now. Yesterday, some of the positives were really on the physical side of things. That Nick Caley is a guy that has talked about bringing more of a physical element to it. The offensive lineman will come in and talk about how the importance of just having physical double teams matters this year, and they want to be able to hang their hat on that. We saw some of that yesterday, and I think in a way that they would have struggled to do last year. So if that's going to be part of the basis of this offense, and there's a little bit of an old school smash mouth mentality to them, you're seeing evidence that they're making some progress in that regard. With CJ, the quick game, I think at times has looked a lot more precise and a lot more automatic than it did during the season last year or in camp. And it comes and goes in splashes, but I'm cool with the fits and starts right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the biggest thing, if you look over the course of the first 2 weeks of camp, what I'm encouraged by is that the defense will come out, and, you know, a couple days ago they tweaked some things with their coverages and some of the looks they showed, and the offense really struggled with it. But we've seen a few times now, the offense comes out the next day, and they look like a cleaner operation, and they look like they've figured some things out. And so for a unit that's trying to catch up to the level that the defense is at right now, they've shown progress.
Yeah, for sure. I guess one of the things is, as Seth and I are here live in West Virginia, we're now looking out on the field here. The guys are all stretching. The quarterbacks are just kind of chit-chatting with each other. CJ's throwing a ball around with one of the assistant coaches. And I just saw Damian Pierce walking around, and it made me think, I guess one of the things we won't get an answer on today, Seth, because the team isn't in pads, it's reportedly going to be a very light practice today, probably over in an hour and 15 minutes. We probably won't get an answer on where exactly Damian Pierce and Christian Harris are in terms of, are they ready to come back and play football?
But it also might be a nice day to ease them back into action more so and do more of the actual football activities.
If they're going to do just some skeleton stuff.
Yeah, so by that, if they're doing more than they have in the other non-padded practices, that's a step in the right direction. I feel pretty confident that right now they're just being super careful with them.
Yeah.
And especially Christian Harris. I think once you have a mystery injury, especially if it's a soft tissue mystery injury that takes way longer to return from, that you take every bit of time you can in trying to come back from it the second time around, to where the guy feels. I'm hoping that Christian Harris has felt awesome for 3 months.
God, it'll and be so nice to get him back.
They're
man.
Being hyper conservative and bringing him
that,
back.
That is something. I mean, it has been out of sight, out of mind, and the difference that the version of Christian Harris that we saw in the postseason in 2023 could make for this team. I mean, I say that it's already a defense that, from the time Christian Harris has been injured, really we haven't seen him since the end of that Ravens game in the playoffs. Since then, think of all the things that have happened with this team. Derek Stingley's become the guy at cornerback. They've drafted Kamari Lassiter. They've drafted Kalen Bullock. They've signed Danielle Hunter. They've signed Azeez Al-Shaair. Will Anderson's taken another step. Like now you're plunking Christian Harris back down into all that too, potentially.
The big question with Christian Harris really is that, yes, he made so much progress in the second half of 2023, but he still has work to do in coverage, in terms of coverage, as all the linebackers do. And, you know, Azeez Al-Shaair, I think at this point in his career, he's what he is. With Henry Toa'otoa and Christian Harris, a lot of it isn't, you know, I don't expect those guys to be able to run step for step with a tight end down the seam all the time consistently. But they've just got to become more veteran in their ability to anticipate routes and their ability to diagnose play action. You know, so you go back to that Lions game last year and the Laporta touchdown.
Yeah.
You know, Toa'otoa just bit hard and got dusted by Laporta. Some of that's just a matter of recognition.
Yeah.
And Harris has been able to work on that and watch film and be in it and everything. It's a lot of it's mental. But that's the next step for him. We know that he can be a force in the run game. And he's a little bit of an eraser in some regards, too, because he can go sideline to sideline. But those guys, and in this defense, there's a lot of stress on the linebackers because of the way they structure their front for them to be able to play the run, but then also get to their pass coverage responsibilities. That's one of the less marquee items. It's kind of a big deal for this team being a genuine top three defense.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We're live at the Greenbrier at Texans practice. Mike Tolman, Texans team president, going to join us at the bottom of the hour. Coming up next, the Texans' week one opponent is the Rams. One of the bigger news stories around the NFL going on right now has to do with the Rams. How is it impacting the Texans' matchup with them in week one? We've got that for you coming up next. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We're live at the Greenbrier in West Virginia. Day three of practice. Going to be a light one today. No pads today. It's been pointed out that I have an obsession with the players practicing in pads. I've been peppering Omar, our media relations kind of the guy who heads up all the media relations guru here for the Texans. I'm the one who's hitting him all the time with, are they in pads? Are they in pads? Are they in pads? Apparently. And it's true. He's nodding his head. They'll be in pads tomorrow. I just want everybody to know that. Joining us right now, a little bit early, but it's good because we'll get to watch a little practice here. But Texans president Mike Tolman, who's been on with us before and out here in West Virginia. Mike, it's great to see you.
Hey, guys. Good to be back. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Of course. I was just thinking as you were sitting in that chair, when we have Nick Caserio come on, he's got theme music when he comes on. He's got walkout music. D-Generation X from WWE. You're a big walkout music person. We need walkout music for you, don't we? For whenever you come on the show with us?
Yeah, I was hoping for that. But you know where I want to try to separate myself a little bit?
Okay.
So I was thinking more like Dry Ice.
Oh, okay.
Can we go that route?
Maybe? Yeah.
Yeah. I thought
for the visual.
I figured that was some band I didn't know about. I was like, oh yeah, Dry Ice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw him in Newport. Yeah.
Have you? Is this your first trip to the Greenbrier for something like this?
It is.
How's it
is.
Gone so far
oh,
for you?
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, what a great setup. Great place for the guys to be together. We ordered in some great weather, as you know.
Yeah.
So I think everyone's really enjoying it.
Yeah, it's been the players to a man, like, it's so much, they come off the field, they're in a great mood. You know, yesterday got a little chippy at the end of practice, so the mood was kind of a, you know, moving scale, but this has been great. Is there any way, we asked you off air, is there any way we could do this for 3 weeks next year?
Yeah, I think, one, we'll start with the weather. We'll see if we can get that, and then keep moving on this. But no, I mean, it's great. I mean, the guys are competing hard.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's great for them to maintain the crispness when you do have a change in the weather like this, mm-hmm. and the environment overall.
Yeah. That the whole traveling for training camp and everything, it's funny because for a long time it's what every team did. And then in the 90s, teams started just practicing at their own facility. And it made sense because a lot of, you know, stadiums had their own locker rooms and everything. And now it almost feels nostalgic to go away for camp. But I see the value in it and just being isolated and you can avoid distraction, all that old school football stuff. And yet at the same time, we're also in a stage where the Texans are talking about, hey, you know, there's a good chance that maybe the headquarters and the locker rooms and the practice facility are going to be away from the stadium where they play the games. And I'm guessing for training camp that might end up in some of the things that you guys are looking at. Do you think about, okay, wow, if we could do training camp a lot differently for the fans if we have a separate headquarters and practice facility?
Yeah, I mean, well, first and foremost, what drives, I mean, there's a theme between everything you kind of laid out, which is how do you put the team in the best environment to compete? Mm-hmm. Like, how do you give them the competitive advantage? And a lot of those things that we've just been talking about are driving lights for us. You know, it's kind of our North Star on, is there a way, an optimal way that we can get everybody together, that they can compete, that they can be together and focus in on getting better. Mm-hmm. And you know, for us, that means the team, that means all of our teammates, the organization overall. And so those are the things that really drive us as we start thinking about where a training facility is. What's the optimal way to approach that? And then certainly, you know, we always think about the fans.
Yeah.
But our driving light is, can we get better as a team? What's the best way to do that?
Have you guys seen, as you look around the league and look at the way some teams do it, is there any team that stands out for that has a kind of facility that looks pretty intriguing and looks like maybe it has a lot of things that you guys might like?
You know, there's a lot. I think, especially if you look globally, you know, the focus in on really the player and how the player individually gets better. You really start thinking about the functionality of the team and what's the easiest way to move from place to place and the overall organization. I think one thing that we know right now, we're not in an optimal spot at this point, just because we're separated in a lot of different places. You know, the guys are crossing Kirby to get from the locker room back to the training facility. So we see a lot of opportunities for us to improve that experience overall. But certainly, you know, you can look across the globe, you know, from Europe to here, where they're really focusing in on what is the functionality of the day for the player and the organization.
That's the one that I visited once long, long ago, and I'm guessing it's still set up the same way, was the Falcons and Flowery Branch, where they have, you know, they have the locker rooms and the weight room. It's all right on the end of the practice field. The practice bubble is right off to the side. But the cool thing that I was impressed by there was that you can go immediately from the weight room out onto the practice field. So whatever the workouts you're doing or everything are super efficient. But then Sean, they had dorms for the players. So like some of the practice squad guys and everything, they had like dorms set up right there. Which I thought, like, that's the coolest thing in the world. Plus, you can keep an eye on them that way.
Yeah.
You don't tell them that part, Mike, but you can keep an eye on them. But it's like cheap, affordable housing, but guys can kind of be around the guys if they choose to.
Seth was actually putting a list of requests together for you for the new facility that I think he's still formulating.
Right? Yeah, that's that was the big one. Yeah. Player dorms.
Yeah, player dorms.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think we probably have to think about the wordsmithing on how we present all that.
Yeah. Branding is a big thing. Mike told and Texans team president joining us. Along those lines, even when you're at a beautiful facility like this, as you're thinking ahead to what your vision of what that might look like, that, you know, the new headquarters or the practice facility, are you walking around a facility like this making mental notes of things of, you know, this would make a lot of sense, or even getting feedback from guys of things that they like at a place here like the Greenbrier?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, was talking with Nick the other day on just, you know, how much the guys like the experience here. And it really comes back to that functionality, like what makes it easy for them to go compete and go through their day. And as you can see, the proximity for the training facility here with the meeting rooms and the ability to work out and the actual training rooms butting up right against the field.
Yeah.
That takes a lot of friction out of your day.
Absolutely.
So you can really kind of focus on what the most important thing is.
Yeah. Mike Tolman, Texans team president, joining us. So, as far as the the stadium goes, are we still same pattern here, where it's the option number one, renovating NRG Stadium?
Yeah. Our focus remains on renovating NRG. I mean, I think I would share we're really happy with the progress we're making with our partners. We have a great partnership with the rodeo. And the county, and we feel like there's been a lot of progress made on it. And our focus is the renovation of the stadium. The county's done a great job, I think, in running a process on studies to really see how that comes about, the viability of it. It's been a very thoughtful and dare I say, exhaustive process. So we can feel really good that when those studies conclude, we'll have the right direction on what the best step is. And so they're coming to an end at this point, and we're looking forward to seeing what the outputs are and taking the next appropriate step.
Is there anything this year in terms of just differences in the game day environment, or just whether it's promotional or just the actual fan experience that you've got planned, or that's going to be different for fans?
Yeah, I'm excited for the fans to arrive. We're all excited for the fans to get there. You know, I think when they arrive, they'll see really like a sensory upgrade. They'll have better visuals. They'll have upgraded video boards. Really one of the impacts that we were excited for the fans to receive is the audio. You know, we have an significantly upgraded audio system. So there'll be a great amplification on the experience when you come to NRG.
Oh, really? Okay. Does that make it almost feel more like a basketball environment? Or?
I mean, the crispness of the sound, for sure. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you could point to that. We've been playing it out a lot at this point, and it's a great venue when you start thinking about how crisp is the sound and how do you amplify that. So I think that's a good analogy.
What are the things when you get feedback from the fans? What's the biggest thing that they say that they want to see improved, or they want to see you guys focus on? Maybe even what NRG looks like down the road. But what's the biggest thing that the biggest touch point the fans have?
You know, some of it's about ingress and egress. Some of it's about ease through the different concourses. And, you know, a lot of the feedback that we'll get certainly from a corporate perspective is the premium offerings, how we stack up against other venues when you have, you know, some of our corporate partners who travel to other venues and see how, you know, the corporate community can engage. You know, those are places that we're all behind.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those are all noted, and those are things we think about as we go through this renovation.
And then, you've talked about that in terms of the renovation and how much the – It seems like, or it sounds like, there's only so much you can do without major structural changes when it comes to getting people in and out of the stadium faster.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we're approaching 30 years. Mm-hmm. You know, at the end of this lease, it'll be 30 years old. So the world evolves over the course of 30 years.
For sure.
Maybe I'm just a child. I like riding those really, really long escalators. And yet at the same time, you realize, like, this is not an efficient way to move people. It's kind of cool to go up, like, four stories in an escalator.
It is.
But my request is that you have, like, 10 of those.
Yeah.
So I can still get the amusement park element of riding on a really long escalator.
Yeah, no, I think that. And we'll talk with the team. We'll talk with the league. We'll talk with the media on having longer breaks for people to get back to their seats.
Yes, there you go.
20-minute break back to your seat.
Well, that's a big thing. It's just the bathroom experience in general for sports.
Longer halftimes, too. We need to load up on more food up in the press box at halftime.
Yeah.
See what
you
can do about that. So these 12-minute halftimes, a little too short. Mike Tolman, Texans president, joining us here live out of Texans training camp. When it comes to some of the stuff that you're looking at right now, Mike, when it comes to the headquarters project, whatever ends up happening with the stadium, from your background, you've got a lengthy background in all this stuff. Is there a certain stop along the way for you that mirrors what it is you're looking at here with the Texans? And if so, what was it, and what makes it similar?
You know, experience-wise, I think this is like one of those unique spots, and you and I have talked about it a little bit, where it's the perfect storm. You know, you have the ability to pull from experiences in the past. You have a great foundation here in Houston. You have the best canvas as you think about in mm-hmm. Houston. So it's tough to draw like, hey, here's one thing that mm-hmm. I think these things exactly apply. But what I do love to point out is it's a special time right now, and you can pull things from a lot of different experiences in the past and pull them forward and say, like, this one really applies and this will be great. There's a uniqueness to Houston. We're going to do some stuff that's just unique to us that hasn't been done before.
Yep.
And then you've learned from mistakes in the past, too. You're like, let's make sure we don't go down that path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. How's the family acclimating to Houston?
They love it.
Yeah, they do?
They do.
Okay.
You know, I mean, it's funny. My wife and I were talking the other day, and, you know, been here about 6 months and have lived in other places much longer, lived in North Texas for, you know, eight, nine years, which is great. That all being said, you know, Houston just feels like home. You know, it has this unique feeling of being so large, but not acting that way.
Yeah.
And being a pretty easy place for the family to wrap their arms
around. That was my, I remember, gosh, 25 years ago, my first impression of Houston after the first 6 months was, it's got a lot of the appeal of a bigger city in terms of just it feels like it has an energy to it, and yet it still has the friendliness of the Deep South, but without just all the, you know, idiocy.
Yeah.
Like a just slack-jawed yokel nature in some ways. So it's kind of like a good blend of both things.
Yeah.
You don't run into that many slack-jawed yokels in Houston. And if you do, they're usually just imports from Indiana or something. Indianans. Yeah.
There you go. Welcome to the Payne and Pendergast.
Yeah, I'm not going to touch that one.
I know you guys in the Notre Dame thing and everything. You don't want to mess with the townies.
Exactly. The countdown begins here to the start of the season, and we get a joint practice next week. So this is going to be a whole lot of fun coming up here for you, Mike.
Yeah, no, couldn't be more excited. I mean, it is the summer is officially over.
Yeah.
And we are diving into it.
Yep, it's going to be good. It's going to be good. All right, well, listen, the drills are starting up out here, out of practice, so we will let you get over to that. We appreciate you, as always, and looking forward to a big season and hanging out with you out here.
You guys are the best. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Mike Tolman, Texans team president, joining
t-shirt.
Us on the show. I know. I want to get one of those. Yeah. See what we can do. Do you know anybody, Mike?
I think we can get Omar over here.
Okay, yeah. I'm bothering Omar enough with my padded practice questions.
He's taking notes.
Yeah, there you go. All right, appreciate you, Mike. Good stuff. All right, when we come back, we'll hit what we talked about before. The Texans week one opponent. News coming out of there that could impact the Texans in week one. We will get to that coming up next. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Big thanks to Mike Tolman joining us on the show. Got a text from a few people saying thank you for bringing up the escalator, Seth. You're the hero they need.
Do they like the escalator?
They like
or
that
not?
You brought up the escalator. Well, they don't like the log jam at the escalator.
Yeah, they could tell that
You're treating it like it's a Disney ride, kind of is, because in Disney you got to wait a really long time to get on the good rides.
It feels like from the books you read as a kid, some of those like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory type yeah. things or something. It feels like I'm on a magic glass elevator. Or
yeah,
something.
The great glass.
And
elevator.
Yeah, when you're a kid. You didn't pay $400 for tickets, and you're not in a hurry to get to the kickoff.
So that's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
So usually when I'm riding the magical escalator, I'm not in the same city. I'm not having the normal fan experience.
No.
I've been at the stadium for 5 hours already.
Yeah, you ain't in no hurry,
it's
man.
A break in my day.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. This is pleasant.
When you're eager
saying.
To get out. No, because when you and I go from the pregame show up to the press box, we always go through the club there.
Yeah.
And there's people just getting onto that long single elevator and getting on a long single escalator, and it's
I would point out to the best of my knowledge, you also are not drunk when you're getting on those escalators
usually,
and looking to get to the next drink either.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Like that's, you don't want to lose that buzz.
They should put a bar on the escalator.
They should, yeah, with cup holders. They should have cup holders in the banister there.
When you're not allowed to, and when there isn't a log jam at the escalator, you're not allowed to walk up it. I got chided by a security guard.
Really? That's exercise.
No walking.
They should have lauded you for trying to improve and build on your physical fitness.
It's a safety concern. Just like the smelling salts being banned.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that today.
So the smelling salts were banned, and as it is whenever there's any rule change in the NFL, people get irate about it without even knowing what they're irate about.
Yeah.
I was actually kind of angry at first, too, because I was a smelling salts guy, ammonia packets guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And the reason the NFL is banning it is that they say that it can mask concussion symptoms. So they don't want it. So as soon as I heard that, I'm like, all right, well, I can't argue against that. It makes sense.
Right.
I would, as a player, because the other thing they'll say is there's no proven performance benefits. And I think this is one of those areas where kind of like back in the day, they used to try to tell us that there were no proven performance benefits to steroids. That's what they would say, Sean.
Yeah.
Scientists would
really?
Tell us. Yes. Yes. You'd look around.
What are those scientists doing today? Did one of those scientists serve me my fries?
Well, it's like they would like take a therapeutic amount of testosterone given to somebody that already has healthy testosterone levels, and that didn't do anything. But when it came to what they were doing at the University of Nebraska back in the day,
right?
Or Michigan State, my God!
Oh,
yeah.
Geez.
Apparently, Tony Mandarich got no benefits from steroids.
No.
So the thing about the smelling salts for me. I don't know if it would make me run any faster on a treadmill or anything, but I always felt sometimes it's a stress response, like a fight or flight response sometimes, that you get kind of lethargic. So, there'd be times, right before games that I would kind of feel lethargic. And I'd never seen the smelling salts before until I got into the NFL, and I saw other players using it. So I tried the ammonia packets.
Okay.
For the first time, it was like, oh, boom. It lifted me right
you
out of that lethargy.
Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. Did it help my game or not? It felt like it did.
Right. Well, George Kittle was upset about
George
this
Kittle
yesterday.
Says he uses them every drive.
He said he might retire now.
Yeah. Now, they banned.
I think that's the case.
They banned ephedrine back in the day.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that they did. That was I needed them to ban ephedrine.
Yes,
because I was.
What is ephedrine?
Ephedrine was. Oh, I'm gonna let me switch my mic here.
Okay, yeah. What does ephedrine? There we go. Watch you enough time. Ooh, that's a good sounding mic right
ephedrine.
There. Ephedrine.
Let me check my level. Ephedrine.
Yeah. Ephedrine.
Okay, so the mini thins in the gas station.
Yeah.
Okay, so they banned those in like 2000. two, I think.
Yeah.
Because they were, at the time, a bunch of athletes had cardiac arrest when they were using like a combination of ephedrine and a few other things. That was when Corey Stringer.
Passed away. Like, yeah, yeah.
That. Yeah. So they banned ephedrine, and that was a good move because I would use that, and it's basically, it was like legal speed almost.
Wow.
But you could buy it in a gas station.
Yeah, yeah,
the
yeah.
Mini thins. But there would be times in college where I would, like, the night after a game, I'd be laying in my bed and my heart was just.
That's not good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Seth's
yeah.
banging on his chest with his hand for those who
and for a
can't see on the YouTube.
For a 320 pound guy, I don't think that was the most healthy thing I could
do. Being 320 pounds isn't the most healthy thing you can do.
Shut
for,
up. You were doing it yourself.
You were doing it for your job. I get it. Yeah. Yeah, but
it's the most lucrative thing I could
no,
do.
No, total. Dude, okay. I would put on 100 pounds in a second if
sorry,
it
Sean.
Got me your salary.
No, but so they banned that.
Seth Payne career earnings.
And yeah. I feel like that actually would I actually felt better after that. I felt like I was a better player because I calmed down a little bit and I could see the game better. But there were a lot of guys that took mini thins back in the day.
Man. All right. So the smelling salts banned. As far as what's going on out here, we're live at the Sports Performance Center at the Greenbrier. Big thanks to Mike Tolman for joining us. The McNairs will join us around this time tomorrow, 9:30 Houston time tomorrow. They're just doing some kind of skeleton walkthrough stuff right now. I guess the most significant thing today, Seth, is that Christian Harris and Damian Pierce are both with the defense and offense, respectively, doing these walkthrough drills.
Yeah.
So no pads on these guys today, but as opposed to the entire preseason so far, where both have been working out off to the side or inside the stadium, or in this case, inside the Sports Performance Center, they're both out here, you know, with the offense and defense. I haven't really seen if either of them have participated in a drill yet, but they're standing with their teammates.
You know, one guy we haven't mentioned as I'm watching the walkthroughs here is Zach Thomas, the offensive tackle.
Number 78.
He took some reps with the ones the other day as well at left tackle. So I think the competition certainly for the swing tackle and the swing interior defense offensive lineman, I think that's wide open.
That's going to be – dude, and do you think Blake Fisher's in danger of getting cut?
Oh, boy, wow.
You know, I mean, you just brought up Zach Thomas as a tackle.
It's a great question.
Yeah.
I think it's a possibility.
Right. So if we take inventory at tackle right now, it's Ariante Ursary, it's Cam Robinson, it's Zach Thomas, it's Blake Fisher. Mm-hmm. Titus Howard is bumped out to right tackle
Trent,
to play some.
Trent Brown, presumably, Trent will come Brown, back from
he comes off
his
pup.
Injury at some
I mean,
point.
If you start digging deeper, Austin Deculus is out here. I think Fisher's ahead of Deculus. But
I felt it was notable that they were giving Zach Thomas reps, even if it was because of injury, with the ones.
But Blake Fisher is healthy, and he's not getting reps with the ones.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why I think it's a fair question to ask. The number that DeMeco brings up anytime you ask him about the offensive line, because he's been asked a ton of questions about the starting five, he will seem to shift the conversation over to the nine we're going to take with us into the season. His number is not doesn't seem to at this point doesn't seem to be about five. It's more about the nine. And if you start doing the math on some of it, this is yet another position where there could be a really interesting cut that takes place. You know, Drew Scruggs, is he in danger? Now, he's been getting reps with the ones, but it's not like he said overall, it's not like he's had a great camp. He was with the threes a week ago.
I guess that's the uncomfortable part of looking at the offense moving forward, is that there's guys that are holdovers from before who, when you put them with the ones, I don't feel awesome about it. Yeah. And all it took was one shifting of Titus Howard out to right tackle, and you realize how thin the depth is, or at least the uncertainty of the situation.
Or how they feel about guys.
Yeah. And Nick had told us that he felt by the time of the Minnesota game, they hoped to have a pretty good feel for what their starting offensive line was. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if they're on that timetable anymore.
Yep.
I wonder if it's going to be more of a drawn-out competition.
All right, let's pay off on the tees. This was Adam Schefter on with Ty, the guy, the McAfee's buddy, Ty Schmidt, I think his name is.
Okay.
Schefter was on with him, looked like on a podcast, and they asked about Matthew Stafford's situation. Stafford has not practiced yet in Rams camp because of a back ailment. So how serious is that is a fair question for probably the team that has the most questions outside of L.A. about that is the Houston Texans, who play the Rams in week one. No Matthew Stafford means you either get Jimmy Garoppolo or Stetson Bennett. How serious is this issue with Matthew Stafford right now? This is Adam Schefter.
My understanding is it is a total maintenance issue. Yes, he has had some back discomfort. He's had some pain. 37 years old, but they don't want to put him out there. They don't want to put any wear and tear in his body. He knows how the game works. He knows how the offense functions. He knows how his teammates think and operate. And so they are intentionally keeping him out in the interest of maintenance, self-preservation, and just wise caution. And my understanding is if the Rams had a game today, Matthew Stafford would be playing without a question. But it's August 5th. Again, there's no urgency to get him out there. There's still plenty of time before the season kicks off.
Okay, again, yeah. my recommendation still to the Rams would be let him sit for a couple of weeks in the regular
season.
Well,
all right. Now, the Rams, one of the big questions about the Rams is always they don't play their starters much at all, if
in
at all.
Preseason.
I think almost they very rarely play their starters in the preseason.
Yeah.
And then they get off to slow starts. Are those two things intertwined? Theoretically, yes, but who knows? I hope they are. Because if the Rams get off to a slow start, that benefits the Texans who play the Rams in week one.
Yep.
So I buy Schefter's explanation for it because the Rams have been very conservative in the way that they treat their starters traditionally. So it would make sense that they're just being hyper-vigilant or hyper-conservative about how they're bringing them back.
Yeah, no doubt.
So I don't know if
that game, I tell you right now, I'm taking the under in that game. You got the Texans team that has been, granted, we haven't seen anything in the preseason yet in an actual game. I'm basing this off of practice and common sense, but I'm taking the under in that game. If you got a Rams team that doesn't play Stafford at all in the preseason going against this Texans defense, and you got this Texans offense that's very much a work in progress as of right now, and I think still will be when the regular season rolls around, going against at least a very good Rams defense in the front, you know, this is a good matchup for the Rams, let's put it that way, to go against the Texans offensive line that's still in the formative stages. Feels like an under to me, Seth.
I don't know what the number is. No, I'd agree with you.
I'm blindly taking the under.
I honestly think if somehow it ends up being Jimmy Garoppolo or Stetson Bennett at quarterback.
There might be some pick sixes.
If it's Garoppolo especially.
Yeah.
I think Garoppolo would throw 29 interceptions against this defense.
He might. He's not careful with the football.
So in which case I would take the over because of pick sixes.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah, you're right. There's going to be pick sixes, so it might be or short fields. For the offense. Yeah, for sure. By the way, congratulations to Will Anderson, number 46 in the NFL's top 100.
Yay!
We just talked about that earlier because they were at 47. They had stopped at 47 yesterday with Tyreek Hill. And Jonathan Grenard was 48.
Mm.
So Will Anderson Jr. a couple stats. So I'm expecting that Danielle Hunter is going to be even higher than both of these guys.
Most likely, yeah.
Yeah. So 46. We got four more Texans to go. You know I love this.
I know you hate it. I don't hate it, Sean.
Yeah.
I try really hard to love it.
I love it. That's to me, anything that power ranks things empirically via subjective ballots from players, I am here for.
Yeah.
46, man.
Yeah.
46. He was unranked last year, Seth.
So what that means is that a certain number of players ranked him in the top 20.
Yeah.
That's why I get excited about it, okay? So the way they do it is they have the players rank their top 20 players. So if you're on the list at all, then somebody out there has put you in their top 20
list.
A lot
of people if you're 46.
Right. So that is a true – I think the actual ranking – is completely bogus, but it is a tip of the cap that many people put you in their top 20.
Yeah. Well, they say that – I read that article in The Athletic last week about the process.
Yeah.
They say there's about 1,000 players that end up voting. They say that about 300 to 400 players each year actually get a vote, are named on a ballot. You know?
Oh, okay.
Somewhere out there, there's a bunch of guys who were 20th on like two or three ballots. There's like 300 guys that actually get a vote somewhere along the way, but it's the top 100 that get the most.
We were going to do a thing once, and then Mike and I decided against it, where we called up our ex-girlfriends,
okay,
and had them rank us in various.
Why didn't you do it?
I felt like maybe it wouldn't be the best thing for my marriage. I don't know. I felt like it'd be the kind of thing that Brandy would be like, "Yeah, that's cool. That'll be funny." And then after like the 19th or 20th girlfriend, it might have gotten kind of.
Oh, you were going to do a bunch of them.
I
thought like your main one.
It was gonna be a recurring thing. No, I can't do the main one. Then I gotta be like, oh yeah, she was the main one.
Yeah.
That's really bad for my marriage.
Brandy ended up number one. Not like the team that wins the national championship gives a crap who voted for who
we
after.
We could have done it with I should have done it with Meltzer though. We could I don't think Meltzer wanted to do it.
Yeah.
I think he was the one that didn't want to do it. I was open
Does
to
Does
Meltzer
it, have enough inventory to fill several weeks of that gimmick?
I didn't want to ask that question, but yeah, that might have been an issue
you
too.
You didn't ask that question even privately?
No, I mean, I didn't want to ask it right now.
Yeah.
On air.
Oh,
yeah.
I got you. I got you. Yeah. That's I mean, cuz if it's going to be a gimmick, you got to have enough weeks
right.
or days for it to sustain. And I'm not saying that to throw shade. I mean, like, I'm trying to think of, like, how many serious girlfriends I've had. Not that many.
We should revisit this because, yeah, it doesn't have to be the risque stuff.
Right.
I mean, for ratings, it would be best to do the risque stuff.
Yeah.
But you and I are both happily married.
Yeah.
We should do something just in terms of, like, attentiveness or cleanliness.
I think Amy would find out.
Personal hygiene.
If we did this exercise with my ex-wife, I think Amy would find out she's got a much better version of me now than existed before. I think she would actually come away feeling pretty decent about it.
You could do it
because we wouldn't do you don't want to do the risque stuff is a little personal
probably. Right yeah. You do the but just do the was he a good listener
was he did he share in the responsibilities that kind of thing all those that's really about it
if there were any kind of responsibilities just, with a high school girlfriend I'm going to tell you right now I rate her a 1 out of 10
yes I was thinking of the ex-wife, but thank you. Yes, that is true.
My high school girlfriend that told me I had to decide whether I love football or her.
That's a good gimmick.
And I was like, well, you're currently my least favorite ex-girlfriend now. That's what I said.
Oh, man. All right, we're going to talk to the guys on In the Loop in just a little bit. Ben, are we doing crosstalk? Are the fellas in the studios up there?
They're sitting here.
They're sitting right there?
We're right here.
Oh, hey, what's up, guys?
How's it going? I missed you.
I missed you too. I still miss you, John. But we'll be together again soon enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean I missed the crosstalk too.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was talking about too.
Yeah, okay.
For sure. Yeah. So don't you hate
when one person cares more about it than the other person?
A little bit. That's kind of what Seth and I were just talking about. Now I know where I stand with John Lopez. Yeah.
John and I are in the boat of like, I don't know if I want to reach out to some of these girlfriends because they've just been trying to find out where to serve this warrant. And lo and behold, they get a call.
That restraining order is always a little dicey. Yeah.
Anytime documentation shows up, it's not good. Documentation's bad.
Mm-hmm.
How are things back in Houston with you boys?
Fantastic. Okay. Keeping up. I mean, I was just chatting
with
him.
He is lying through his teeth. He was just battling traffic.
Oh, no. That part was, that was stupid. But anyway, I was just chatting with Parker, our program director, and we both agreed. We both landed on, wouldn't it be nice to have less belt to ass and more offense doing something?
That's what yesterday was.
Yeah.
Yesterday
kind of, sort of, right?
Yeah. But it was like yesterday, Sean, was the old, it felt better. It feels better when you stop banging your head against the wall.
Yeah.
My head feels better now. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like it was awesome.
Right.
That time that I was banging my head against the wall felt better when I stopped.
As one does. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. But it was, yesterday was much more even, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Monday was, as we've talked about with you guys at 12:40 each day. Monday was a disaster, but yesterday was much, much better. And today out here, I mean, there's no pads today. They're just doing a lot of walkthrough stuff. I don't know how many hot takes are going to come out of today's practice, but they are back in pads tomorrow. So, but it's been great out here, man. It's been great. And I guess the biggest news today so far is that Damian Pierce and Christian Harris are at least both back and integrated, not practicing on the side fields, but they're at least with the defense and offense. So it feels like we're getting closer to the two of them coming back.
Yeah.
Hey, I mean, speaking of getting back up to speed, you guys had to stretch a little bit, right? Like, you're used to going, giving us a little bit shorter of an outing. We had to stretch you into a full starter. How are you guys doing today?
Today? Yeah, we've been openers for the last for the last 10 days. No, we're fine. We're good, man. It's there's a lot to talk about.
I got to spew nonsense into a microphone for 2 hours instead of spewing it to Sean in a car.
That's right. That's exactly right.
I do want to say this. Y'all were just talking about the numbers game along the offensive line.
Yes.
That's actually a segment we put together today. I did the math, and the math is going to tell us a lot.
Can we? Because I have spitballed a few other positions because I think running back, now that Damian's back out here, I think even before Damian got out here with the way Jawar Jordan's been running and Woody Marks was going to make the team anyways. But I think running back, I think wide receiver, defensive tackle. Look, we did a 5 or 10 minutes on that quote that DeMeco had yesterday about Tommy Togiai being the most consistent guy on the team. And if you look at it right now, we're like looking out on the field right here. He's with the twos and the threes right now, you know. So it's he's been good for. He played well at the end of last year. There might be too many bodies out there.
Yeah, but I think by far it's offensive line. By far the numbers game is at the offensive line most interesting to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, the physicality on the offensive line yesterday was promising. They got some good push in the run game, and I think the more promising part about that, and it's not like it was all of a sudden all out ground assault or anything, but that you could see that Nick Chubb, he still has his vision. He can still run with power, and it's anybody's guess as to exactly what he's going to look like when he sees tackle football. But there's an element of him and just his overall ability as a mm-hmm. back, whether he ever gets up to 90% of what he was or not, who knows, but there's something there.
Did we thank the A&M Auto Leasing? I just want to make sure that we always thank A&M Auto Leasing.
I got to get, again, like I got to stretch out those hammies, after, you know, Crosstalk sponsored by D&M Auto Leasing. Hey, John, back to the offensive line real quick. So D'Amico keeps bringing up that it's about the nine guys they want to bring into the season. You know, people ask about the starters. He always kind of shifts the conversation over to getting the best nine guys onto the team. As you're doing your back of the cocktail napkin math,
mm-hmm.
which I'm assuming you did, just jotting down a bunch of names. Like,
yes.
How many names are in the mix right now? Do you think, like realistically, to have an argument to make the team on the offensive?
Well, the total number would probably be 11 realistic. Mm-hmm. 11 realistic, because there's six that are absolute locks that are fighting for the five starting spots.
Okay, let me ask you this. What is the most realistic holy bleep cut there would be on the offensive line?
Blake Fisher.
Okay. Yeah, Seth and I just had this talk like 10 minutes ago. Yeah.
Yeah, second rounder getting cut in his second year is that's a rarity.
Well, mm-hmm. and when all the behavior of the team right now is, if you wonder why we're talking quiet now, guys, it's because Blake Fisher might be able to hear us. but when the behavior of the team, when every opportunity they've had to bump him up and get some reps with the ones, they've opted not to throughout camp. You know, they could have put him at right tackle, you know, when they were doing that shifting with Ariante Irsery. He could have been him instead of Zach Thomas yesterday with the ones. So, yeah, that's a good topic, John.
Thank you. I bet you're wondering what the question of the day is and you missed it.
Oh, yeah, what is it?
Yeah. What do you wish you had 10% of, as in the NFL having 10% of ESPN?
I'll give just you a steak, right? We're not
just
like
a 10% steak,
and I'm not slicing a piece off of something.
Yeah, I'll give you some examples to get the thoughts rolling here. Okay. I wish I had 10% of Taylor Swift's followers.
That's a good one.
I wish I had 10% of HEB shelf space for
OG sauce.
I bet you do.
I wish I only had 10% of the body fat I have right now.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, or just a 10% body fat.
Or 10% body fat. Yeah, I would settle for that. That's a
really good one.
Yeah.
I would say I wish I had just 10% of the problems in life that I have.
Oh, God.
Not that I got a bunch of them or anything, but 10% of it seems like anything that annoys me in a particular day or anything.
We're basically...
No, you know what? I don't take... That's too few.
Yeah, that's
the stress
too easy.
You need a certain amount of stress
you
level to make you feel alive.
Just to keep you on edge. Yeah. Keep you focused.
Yeah.
So we're basically tithing today is what we're doing.
Yes.
It's a 10% day.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Except not to the NFL or to Disney.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. Well, the ESPN was busy yesterday, man. They made that deal with the NFL, and I don't know if you guys saw. I know neither of you guys are wrestling nerds like I am, but they're partnering up with WWE. Yeah. They're going to be carrying all the pay-per-views on the ESPN app. They're paying WWE like $325 million a year or something.
Yeah,
crazy. And
you got to remember, I'm not a WWE nerd, but I am a sports business nerd, and so that immediately got into my wheelhouse. I find that interesting just because how many times has ESPN tried to make the ESPN Plus or Watch ESPN or whatever iteration that they're calling it some level of like useful? I think this might actually be the thing does it.
It's I'm telling you, it will. They're stealing it from Peacock, so I don't know. You know, like I'd be curious if that's a relationship that NBC feels like was working for them, or if ESPN just basically money whipped WWE.
Yeah,
NBC was out on that, but yeah, I thought that was that. It's just interesting seeing wrestling butting up alongside. I mean, it's obviously different, but butting up alongside sports is pretty incredible. If you're somebody who has been watching it for the last 30 years,
yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah, going from that space of almost being like kind of jeered at in a way, but now it's, I mean, you're putting it alongside all of the other sports, but some of that also is like a larger conversation about ESPN and where they are headed. I mean, I just saw that they hired a content creator specifically to be a content creator for ESPN, which feels like it would have never happened as recently as like five years ago.
Yeah. And she's like a lifestyle and sports commentator. Yeah. It's not even as,
Times are changing. All right, fellas. Well, we will, we'll be talking to you guys in the not too distant future, right? 12:40 today.
Yes, that's right. Go watch that practice, fellas.
Yeah, I don't know how much of stuff we'll have out here, you know, with it being kind of a walkthrough-ish sort of thing, but I guarantee you we'll have some stuff from out here for you.
And we'll have I'm going to interview Danielle Hunter as long as I don't drop the camera and stop recording in a minute and a half into it like I did with Kalen Bullock yesterday.
Yeah, yeah, dude. Guys, I interviewed Jalen Petrie yesterday, and I uploaded the interview to Instagram, and I get a text from my son like 10 minutes later, like, Pop, your interview cuts off after 51 seconds on Instagram. Yeah. This is right after Seth posted his video of his camera falling down during the Kalen Bullock interview, and I'm like, yep, they sent the right two guys to the green.
Content creators, baby.
Sean and I are making
They should have brought me out there, man.
Argument for keeping the 50-year-olds in the organization.
Bring me next time, man.
Yeah, I know,
dude, for sure. For sure. Oh, Figgy, I actually have a question for you off the air, which I'm sure John and Reggie will be thrilled about, that I'm usurping their producer to help me post something on my Instagram story.
Yes, exactly. Actually, 100%
I'll do it during a break.
100%
good with it. I'll do it during a break. All right, fellas, we'll talk to you in a couple of hours.
Yes, sir. Thanks.
12:40 your time. Appreciate you guys. Do I still say you've been listening to KLT, KLT, AM, KLT, KILT, FM, HD2?
We're still in the contiguous
Houston,
United
an Odyssey
States.
Sports station. Do I still say that?
Yes. I believe so, just like you did.
Well, I think I just did.
Mm-hmm.
Do I still say Crosstalk, brought to you by D&M Auto Leasing?
Yes, that as well.
I think I just did. And I believe this is when I say antibodies to you, Seth.
Oh, antibodies and a vat of mini thins to you.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Always been looking for a vat of mini thins. Appreciate that.